Mmm, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Did S Club reunite? Cause Hannah screamed out for more.
Answer me this, answer me this.
What are the odds of Paul getting back down on the floor?
Answer me this, answer me this. Helen and Ollie, answer me this.
Always good to start an episode by talking about something we fucked up in a previous episode. Grant from the Ministry of Truth, by which I mean Minneapolis, has been in touch to say, I was listening to episode 302 when I was amazed to hear Ollie claim that Mario's last name is Mario.
Oh, one of these again. We've had so many of these come in.
Well, it's very important.
Well, look, if you were amazed, Grant, then you were amazed by a fact which is widely dispersed on the internet.
Grant says this is a common misconception that was spread by the Super Mario Brothers movie from the 90s, but Mario and Luigi are, in fact, mononymous.
Do-do-do-do-do. Mononymous. Do-do-do-do.
They do not have any surname at all. Their creator, Shigeru Miyamoto, confirmed in an interview with the gaming magazine Game Informer that Mario
I don't know how I missed that, because I get every issue.
Check your scrapbook, because you keep pages, don't you? Mario is really just Mario, and Luigi is really just Luigi. Mm. Though I guess I shouldn't be surprised by people who pronounce my name Grant instead of the American way of... I can't
Grant.
Say it. Why are you trying to humiliate
Grant.
Me this way, Grant, when you know that I can't say it properly?
Well, look, Grant... I don't accept your correction on this because, like I say, we've had lots of this correspondence, but all of you proper hardcore gaming nuts all have different advice.
Hardcore, just because they read Game Informer.
Well,
from the 90s.
I think it's fair to say they have a slightly more accelerated interest than the mainstream. And all of you have a different view on this because, actually... Ben from Coventry, for example, he got in touch to say, well, when Miyamoto first created Mario, he named him Mr. Video. So Mario and Luigi should both be called Mario Video. I'm afraid that just because I don't take the creator's word as gospel...
Yeah, because what would he know about the people that he invented?
I gave the answer that they're called Mario, Mario and Luigi Mario because, yes, that was decided by the scriptwriters of the film.
But the film is not considered canon.
Well, I'm prepared to consider the film canonical because those film writers were paid a lot of money to sit in a room and write an excellent piece of movie making.
You were pursuing money rather than the truth, Ollie.
No, a lot of clever men, and possibly women, I don't know.
Nah, very unlikely.
Highly
unlikely. It's bad now, imagine what it was like in the 90s.
Sat in a room, got paid a lot of money to think, right, what is Mario and Luigi's surname? Let's look through the annals of Mario history. This is what they come up with.
Wow, they really shut the bed then, didn't they? Well, let's just call him by his own name.
I'm sorry, I think it's all down to the vagaries of the original conceit. As we addressed in the last episode, as I'm not climbing down from my answer.
It's almost like the original creator didn't think about creating fully rounded characters.
No, well, you only see one side of them. They are very one-dimensional, aren't they?
Mm. Hello, it's Dave from Coventry here. I've just been listening to episode 302, and you spoke about Supermarket Sweep, which sends shivers down my spine. When I was a very young lad, my mum and dad were on Supermarket Sweep. And they actually got through to the final round, but they missed out on the £2,000 grand prize because they ran straight past the prunes. But what people don't know is that the supermarket that it was based on was an Asda, which is why my mum is convinced that she lost, because she only shopped in Tesco's back then. Oh, and other side notes, my mum and dad were also on Every Second Counts, which is a very old programme with Paul Daniels, but they don't talk about that. Because Paul Daniels was a twat.
Did they like him? Not a lot.
Was he really such a twat that he didn't even supply a good anecdote for them to bandy around about when they were on Every Second Counts?
I'm afraid I've met Paul Daniels, you know, in a very, very kind of brief fashion, and he was very charming.
In what context did you meet him, though? You weren't a snivelling contestant being ground under his heel on his game show, were you?
I've met him twice. Once on the Royal Mile in Edinburgh when he was trying to get students like me to come and watch his magic show.
Well, then I can understand why he didn't play it high-handed.
Yes, he'd be gregarious at that point.
Peasant, come see my show.
And the other time was when you and I were working at the BBC, mm-hmm. and they were filming Strictly Come Dancing on the same night we were there to do a show for Five Live,
yep.
and we were all waiting for a cab in the reception.
Yeah.
So then, again, I suppose I was an equal with him. At that moment, we were both talent. The time before, I was a potential customer of his.
Did you actually speak to him?
What he actually did is come up. He walked up to me, not knowing me at all, tapped me on the head, which...
On the head?
Yes, which
How
involves...
did he reach?
Exactly, like a sort of Nazi-style salute from him, and said, "Goodness gracious, you're a tall man, aren't you?" That's what he said.
Everyone's tall to Paul Daniels, though.
Well, yeah.
He's small Daniels.
I suppose it might have been seen by some people as condescending, but I thought it was actually... Someone, for me, was a big star when I was a kid.
Yes.
You know, actually...
It was a real magical moment for you, wasn't it?
He was getting down. He was happy to chat. Yeah, I thought he was a bit high off the back of having just done Strictly, obviously.
Yeah.
He might have been a bit adrenalised, but, you know, he seemed like a nice man, so I reject your parents' analysis.
But also, surely you would tell people you were on that quiz, regardless of whether or not the host was a twat, because the host is only part of the experience.
A lot of people, though, that are serial quiz participants, like it sounds like Dave from Coventry's parents are, do so many of these quizzes that, in a way, it's probably easier to say that the host was a twat on one of them than to go into the story of one that perhaps you weren't particularly proud of if you've got many under your belt.
What if they didn't get very far along in the quiz? Yeah. It's easier to say, it's because of the sabotage of Paul Daniels. Not because of those goddamn prunes hiding.
I think people who serially appear on quizzes often have... a sense that they are part of the talent themselves.
The more difficult quizzes.
But actually...
It's like a single episode reality show cast.
Yeah, the thing is, the audience never remember them. The audience just see them as
harsh.
What about
Eunice Huttart in Gladiators? What about Wesley Two Scoops Berry?
Generally speaking, the audience see them as a conduit for themselves. You know, they're watching it and they're thinking, how would I have answered that question?
Yes.
And
the prunes are right there! Grab them!
Exactly.
Grab them!
And unless you're the person who wins £1 million on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, you're destined to be forgotten. Mm. You're just a vessel for the audience to project themselves into the show. And I think that's quite hard to take if you're someone who's done a lot of shows and appeared on primetime television. It's the level of mundane chat you need to have as well.
So to do that.
Yeah. No, you couldn't.
Oh, yes, just been doing up my caravan.
No, actually, exactly. You couldn't, Martin, because you have to start the show with, "So you're Martin, and what do you do, Martin?"
I'm a university lecturer.
Yes, already. Hard for the audience to relate.
Try again, Martin. What do you do?
Oh, right. I'm a computer programmer. How about that?
Boring. Nerd.
That's quite normal,
Nerd.
Though, isn't it?
Well, let's see if you get with the program today.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah it's, the questions are going to be pretty basic.
Laughing at that, Ollie. Doesn't seem to be your kind of irv.
I think it was the flirtatious smile with which Martin delivered the punchline. It was very good.
He's made for television. Well, here's a question from Moz, who says, "Ollie, answer me this. Why are there mirrors in the gym? Not even just one mirror on a wall. You're surrounded by them.
Ugh.
Why is this? My good lady wife insists that it's for people to check out other people without them knowing. And it's a hotbed of sexual activity and cruising." I think that depends on which gym.
I think, yes. I think if you're talking about, you know, the original Gold's Gym on Venice Beach, you may have a case. If you're talking about the Gold's Gym, for example, on the A41 in Hendon, not so much.
Maybe.
But in my experience, full of elderly Jewish women.
Yeah, where else are they supposed to get their cruising on?
I don't have an issue. I'm not sure it's a sexual hotbed. Although I'm sure they do have hot beds because they probably have heated blankets.
Moz says, "I'm sure that can't be the real reason, right?" Right?
Well, technically, the reason that gyms have mirrors is so that you can check you have the right form when you're working out.
Yes.
Because if you lift weights and then you have to crane your neck to see how you look and whether you're holding your posture, then obviously, by definition, you are no longer holding the correct posture.
Yes.
You need to be looking ahead of you, and otherwise it's very bad for you.
Same in things like aerobics.
Yes, exactly.
It's hard, particularly when you're as mal-coordinated as I.
But I do think it is the case that, obviously, as gyms have evolved and become something that you see on pretty much every high street, it's now partly, to be honest, just that customers expect it. Customers expect a big, long row of treadmills, even if they're never, ever, always occupied. They expect the row of TVs, one showing Sky News, one showing Sky Sports, one showing MTV, and they expect a wall of mirrors because that's what a gym looks like.
Also, does it make the gyms look bigger?
Yes.
Because often they're rather unprepossessing rooms.
I think, you know, that would be certainly a reason why gym owners wouldn't object to this policy.
Yeah, some of them are windowless as well, and it gives the impression of windows.
Yes, and actually, the gyms that I've been to where they don't have the mirrored walls are the gyms that have good views.
Yes.
If there's a gym where you can be on a treadmill and looking out, you know, from a skyscraper 20th floor, for example, over a stunning vista, those are the ones that tend not to have mirrors. It's the ones that are above shops that have mirrors.
But I'm sure for some people, they are motivated either by the sight of themselves looking very fit or by the sight of themselves looking red and disgusting, and they think, well, I've got to make myself better. Uma Thurman, I remember, said that after she'd given birth, she decided to lose weight by eating naked in front of a mirror.
actresses.
Yeah.
That tells you everything you need to know.
There's a lot of self-hatred there, isn't
there? So much. And so much bonkers.
Well, here is a question from Liz in Brooklyn, who says, in a conversation about terrible online dating messages we'd received, my cousin told me that she had once gotten an OK Cupid message from a man who wanted her to give him a hand job with cheese.
Just when you think you've heard it all.
Pulp Fiction 2. Ollie, answer me this. How would a cheesy hand job work?
Right.
One of our friends thought the man must be referring to a hard block of cheese with a hole drilled in it, or a hole automatically in it, like Leerdammer.
That's not a hand job, that's a cheese job.
Yeah. Another thought he must mean a soft cheese. I assumed he must want a fairly standard hand job with slices of processed cheese in her hands.
Oh, a kind of hot dog arrangement, but with your wiener as the wiener.
Since I doubt we'll ever get an answer from the man himself, what, they didn't go out? I have turned to you. Ollie, what did he mean? Which type of cheese could he have wanted? I mean, personally, my cheese tastes are very seasonal, because in summer I want something like a fresh goat, and in winter I might want something more farmy.
Yeah, I've recently...
Not for a hand job, just for eating.
I think in reality what he wanted is a hand job with cream cheese. Yes, because I...
Oh, as lube.
I've Googled hand job with cheese.
I mean, you'd done that before we got this question.
And the only variant that I can actually find committed to film...
And people have at this point committed every sexual practice to film. So if it exists, you've found it, Ollie.
Is of a man who is first kind of worked into a lather by a lady using, as far as I can tell, Philadelphia as lube, effectively.
Okay.
I don't know if this is viral marketing for Kraft. Or whether this was done...
It's not the normal route they go.
It's not. But after having used it as a lubricant, she then uses his penis to penetrate the hole in a bagel. Mm. So the bagel is then... It's basically like he's fucking a cream cheese bagel.
But he's also spreading it, in a way.
In a way, yes, exactly, yes. You know, what I expected to happen at the end of that scene, probably...
Was someone to have to eat that bagel.
Yes, I thought the money shot would have been into the bagel, and then perhaps that would be served up to the lady, squirt of lemon juice, bit of coriander. But actually, I was very disappointed.
Sure you were.
The final scene was... she just jacked him off with some whipped cream.
What?
Yeah, I know.
And well, that would make sense. That would be pudding.
Well, I know that...
He's already covered in rancid dairy products. Why does he need more?
I know. Yeah. I agree. I thought maybe at the end she'd at least grate some parmesan on me or something.
Is it squirty cream or properly whipped?
Squirty cream. You've set up the cream cheese thing, you know, this slightly odd...
We wanted savoury, we did not want to go to pudding it.
We wanted a New York deli-themed sex video, please. We wanted an end where, at the very least, you coated his torso in lox.
You wouldn't put whipped cream on pastrami, would you?
Exactly.
I feel like the pudding course version of this would be more pleasant, though. A donut, and then he could glaze the donut.
Yes, I think it's more acceptable kinky play. Although, actually, I do acknowledge, Liz, that... to have brought this conversation up on OKCupid as part of a pre-date banter.
It's bold.
It's a bit weird. I nonetheless would say, in the context actually of a loving relationship, as sexual quirks go...
You are going home tonight and asking your girlfriend for a cheesy favour.
I'm not sure bringing food into the bedroom is a particularly unusual one. You know, cream cheese, it's savoury and that's a little bit unusual. But actually, you know, if someone said, what I really like to do is... sit in bed with, I don't know, a champagne martini, and then you...
A champagne martini? That is more deviant than anything you've just described.
And then, you know, we like to eat the olives off each other's nipples. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a bit kinky, but it's mainstream weird, I would say.
Average.
It's mainstream alternative. It's the XFM of sexual practices.
It's when you're licking soup off your partner, that's when things get really kinky.
Exactly. So actually, I don't think cream cheese as a staple product you'd find in the fridge is necessarily all that odd. What I'm saying, Helen... is that if Martin said to you one day, what I'd really like to do is bring food into the bedroom...
I'm uncomfortable that you're using us as an example.
I'm just saying, because you've got a married
people.
Couple in
We're
front
real
of me.
Here.
If you... All right, the other way around. Martin, if Helen said
no,
to you...
Oh, no, that doesn't make it better.
If Helen said to you, can we introduce cream cheese into our lovemaking? It wouldn't be a divorcing issue, would it? It would be something that would be like, okay, that's a weird fantasy, but we'll talk about it.
Have you smelt cream cheese that's been out of the fridge for a little while? I don't think this would be very arousing at all.
It's mostly petrochemicals, isn't it? I feel like it's like KY in slightly more solid form.
If you've got a question... Email your question to answermethispodcast@googlemail.com. 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 Answermethispodcast@googlemail.com.
Here's a question from Sam in Canada, who says, I work in a library and we use the Dewey Decimal System to keep our non-fiction books, like Answer Me This. Thanks for the plug, Sam.
That is not in any Canadian libraries, is it? I don't think it was even on sale in Canada.
It might, well, maybe someone's made a special effort to order it there.
Thank
anyway,
you.
Thanks for that. To keep our non-fiction books organised. By the way, just hearing the words Dewey Decimal System brings me immediately straight back to the library in my primary school when I'm 7 and the librarian is explaining the system to us. Does it
Why?
Do that for you? Did you not have that lesson at school?
No one has ever explained it to me.
We did it every year at my school.
Why?
So every year.
Wow. Training you up to be librarians?
Yeah, every year, tour of the school library in the first week of September.
They really packed the wrong course, didn't they? Yeah.
Well, I knew where all the books were because I'd read them all. Decimal system was in my brain.
I read most of the books in my primary school library just before I became a Philistine, including the comic books. The last time I read a comic book.
You peaked too early, didn't you?
Yeah. Sam continues. The Dewey Decimal System is easy to use,
really?
But each number is supposed to represent a topic.
Right.
And sometimes the topics that are related to each other are really weird. So, Helen, answer me this. Who invented the Dewey Decimal System, and how did they decide what goes at what number?
Oh, it was invented by Dewey Cox from Walk Hard.
I imagined it was Dewey Duck, Donald's nephew.
It was actually a man called Melville Dewey, and he was an educational reformer from a very young age, but also he was very much in favour of spelling reform. So he changed his name from Melville, Mel V-I-L-L-E to Melville, Mel V-I-L.
Oh, I see. I thought you meant spelling reform as in like in a B, you know, R-E-F-O-R-M, reform.
And he, for a short time, respelt Dewey, which is usually D-E-W-E-Y, as D-U-I.
His own name,
Dewey.
Was driving under the influence of charge at that time, was that why he changed it back?
Well, this is the 1870s, so
driving
I don't
a horse,
think so.
Maybe.
So why was he so keen on coming up with a system to navigate libraries? What had they had in place before that?
Chaos.
But, you know, like you go in a secondhand bookshop now, for example.
Yes.
And it's clearly signified, isn't it? Biography, military history.
Yes.
I don't think, oh, but it hasn't got a Dewey number on it. I just think, oh, okay, well, that's where all the books are in alphabetical order within that genre. What's the problem with that?
Not necessarily in alphabetical order, Ollie, because when I worked in a secondhand bookshop, because it was so old, the shelves were different heights. So you kind of had to arrange things according to where the books were short enough to fit. So poetry, it'd be ideal if it was in alphabetical order, but sometimes you had to make arbitrary distinctions of period or genre in order that they would fit on a short shelf.
kind of makes sense, yeah.
But he came up with it age 22 in 1873 when he was working at Amherst College Library. And I think he just thought, well, this would be marvellously well organised. And then he copyrighted it in 1876. Melville Dewey also tried to switch the US over to the metric measurement system. And obviously that did not catch on. They're still all about gallons and pints and things like that.
Yeah, well, they're quite traditionalist, aren't they, in the US? Whereas I guess they didn't really have a book numbering system before he came up with his one, so he got in there.
No. And he also helped arrange the 1932 Winter Olympics. What a diverse man.
He did have an interesting career, didn't he?
Yeah.
He was the Johnny Marr of his generation.
I don't think Johnny Marr has helped with the Olympics yet, has he?
He hasn't, but he's done pretty much everything else.
Well, he's played guitar. What else has he
done?
He's
done Modest Mouse for a bit.
He's done Modest Mouse, musical soundtracks.
Yeah, but that's all guitar-based.
Yeah.
Well, no.
He's not done Winter Olympics and numerical systems and spelling reform.
I said he was the Johnny Marr of his generation.
Though.
Marr of our generation is different.
He's making Johnny Marr look very one-dimensional.
Well, here's another question of books now from Richard in Finsbury Park, who says, my mother is 82 years old. She loves reading and always looks forward to visits from the mobile library.
I'm kind of reassured that there are still mobile libraries that are able to operate.
As I am such a kind son, continues Richard, I gave my mum a Kindle. She loves it. I have been helping her load Geoffrey Archer novels onto it and the other shit she likes to read.
That is very altruistic of you.
She doesn't know that I can add books to her Kindle remotely.
Wow, I did not know that was a possible thing.
Yeah, it sort of is. I don't think it's designed that you can do it if it's not your Kindle, but obviously
yes.
Since she won't have any web presence, I guess you can effectively...
Well, not obvious.
Well,
your grandmother has web presence?
Nah, not really. She's
run several Twitter accounts. She does all those Uber facts and stuff, doesn't she?
She's Cat Bin Woman.
Historical pics.
No, she's got a Yahoo Mail account, but if I was setting up a Kindle for my grandmother, I would...
You'd be the mastermind.
I'd set it up to my email so that I could order her things, yeah. So I guess that's what he's done. So effectively, it's his Kindle, but he's given it to her, I guess.
Right.
He says, I live 200 miles away from her.
Doesn't matter because of the internet.
That's right, yeah. I guess that's his point. Anyway... I have done a bad thing. I downloaded 50 Shades of Grey and I changed it.
How?
I switched the names of the two main characters, Anastasia and Christian, to the names of my elderly parents, Christine and Frank.
I didn't even know that was possible.
How,
I didn't know you could do that with Kindles.
I guess you'd have to download the book and then transform it from a PDF to a Word document and then back again or something like that.
It's hassle, but then what price for a prank?
Well, it's worth it for this.
It's like an adult version of those Your Name in This Book books.
Yeah, exactly.
So I had one when I was a child, a circus one, perfectly innocent, no BDSM, and I loved it.
Yeah, whereas this would be like Choose Your Own Sex Adventure.
Yeah, but I was like, how do they know my brother's name? How do they know what our dog is called?
I have put the changed version, continues Richard, onto her Kindle.
Richard, you are an absolute mastermind, and I salute you.
She won't twig that it has been personalised. I know that she'll go around telling people that she's read 50 Shades of Grey, and that it's so remarkable that the main characters have the same names as her and my dad.
Well, it is.
So, Helen, answer me this. Was that very wrong?
No.
And what other books can I defile to fuck about with my elderly parents?
Brokeback Mountain. Bible?
The problem with the Bible is it's so long and you wouldn't be able to put it on verse 1, chapter 1. You'd have to bury it in the middle of a boring story about Jacob or something.
Just change the word God to Frank and Jesus to Christine. Not a problem. Is this prank slightly going to backfire on Richard? Just the notion of his mother reading a sex book that is effectively about her and Richard's father having sex.
Yes.
That would gross a lot of people out too much to do this otherwise pretty excellent prank.
Yes, would you have the balls to read your own doctored version of 50 Shades of Grey, Richard? Because if you wouldn't, is it fair to ask your mum to do the same?
Brilliant joke, though. Maybe you could put the Answer Me This Christmas on there as well, since we're not that far away.
That's right, yeah, Christmas is coming. And yes, the perfect present for anyone, including your mum, is the Answer Me This Christmas album, available at only £2.49 from answermethisstore.com. And here's a little clip of it for this week's intermission.
What about do 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 do
do do do
do do
do do do
do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do
do
do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do
do do do do do
do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do do
do do do do
But I also take out War Is Over by John Lennon.
I like Feliz Navidad. That doesn't get played
Which
very
one's
much.
That?
Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. I wanna wish you a Merry Christmas.
Is that by?
It's a Mexican dude.
Is that by Morrissey?
That was a little snippet of the Answer Me This Christmas album. It's just 1 month to go.
Yeah, so if you want to feel festive already, why not buy our exclusive album? You will not hear it anywhere else, as if you'd ever hear Answer Me This anywhere else.
It might be booming out of the speakers at department stores, mightn't it?
But the point is, it's all material that we made it last year. So obviously, if you bought it last year, you've already got it.
Same one as last year.
Same one as last year. But it's never been transmitted as part of our podcast feed before. So
all new last year.
So it's an hour of us answering your Christmas questions from last year about, for example, why does Rudolph have a red nose?
Kwanzaa. One about that. What you do with your shitty presents.
The dark side of Dr. Seuss. That's in there.
Yes.
Family dinner disputes.
I think now is the time of year to listen to it, isn't it?
May is
not the time.
Correct, yes. So we're doing a big push for the Christmas album, but all of our albums, Jubilee, Sports Day, Holiday and Christmas.
Timeless, one and all.
are, you know, taken together. Only a tenner and 4 hours worth of us talking extra stuff you may not have heard, and they're all available at answermethisstore.com, and buying them supports the show, so thank you for doing it.
So treat yourself. And Richard, who is 23 and from Bradford, has written in about treating himself. He says, I occasionally treat myself to a McDonald's breakfast.
You value yourself very highly.
I occasionally treat myself to a stubbed toe, Richard.
I actually treated myself the other day to a McDonald's breakfast, and I was shocked to see that the McCafe has ripped off the Starbucks red cups. I mean, I know that they're popular, but it's such a global competitor, Starbucks, to McDonald's.
How have they... How?
They
how?
Do the
Why?
Thing where you get how? A special coloured cup at Christmas.
So do Costa. They've got them like little Santa jackets.
But you'd expect Costa to rip off Starbucks because they're direct competitors.
Well, I wouldn't expect McDonald's to be a bastion of original thinking. Well, they've got Christmas, have they? Well, we're going to go Hanukkah.
If they went Eid, I would applaud that. But no, I just think... you know, it's such a Starbucks thing, they'd be better off not muscling in on that territory, was my opinion.
Yes,
you know,
well,
just why when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's brazen.
I think Richard would agree with you because he's big into the McDonald's branding. He says McDonald's has an effective McBranding McStrategy when it McNames its McProduct.
It certainly McDoes.
I understand this and I do enjoy a McMuffin or a McFlurry.
Who McDoesn't?
I do not understand why it doesn't extend this to my preferred breakfast option, the bagel.
Yeah, it's true. It is just called a bagel, isn't it, at McDonald's?
Ollie, answer me this. Why be it a McMuffin, but not a McBagel?
Well, actually, on the subject of originality, I think it does come from that.
Oh.
As far as I can tell, the Mc prefix is added to products where McDonald's are trying to tell you that they've been innovative within a certain genre.
Yeah, but they didn't invent muffins.
They
didn't
did.
Even invent burgers.
Well, bear with. They did.
Nuggets?
Wait. They did. So, okay. Let's take the McFlurry. We can all agree that McDonald's is sent... I mean, I don't know if another restaurant did something similar and they ripped it off, but essentially...
They invented the Pizza Hut ice cream factory, but in one cup.
On an international stage, McDonald's invented the idea of a cheap ice cream layered with a branded sweet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And thus the McFlurry was born. In the same way, yeah, they didn't invent muffins, but it's not a muffin, is it? A McMuffin is a McDonald's patty.
It's not a muffin. And, it's a McMuffin.
And some meat and some cheese and stuff on a muffin. And in that sense, I don't think that was a breakfast stuff you could get widely across most of the countries where the McMuffin is available. So in that sense, they did invent that product category. People weren't eating that for breakfast in this country before the McMuffin. The bagel, they can make no claims to. The bacon roll, and they're very sensitive about this, I think, in the UK, they make no claims to. It's not called a McBacon roll. They just call it the bacon roll. So as far as I can tell, especially with the breakfast items, Mc, if they invented it, just the plain name if they didn't.
Filet-O-Fish, then. Why isn't that Mc? Because they kind of...
But Filet-O-Fish is a whole separate conversation, but the Filet-O-Fish comes from a different era, doesn't it? It comes from a different... It's a classic menu item, so it's different.
And those items... I suppose the McHamburger is not a Mc...
Exactly.
Anything.
Big Mac is quite good, isn't it? Because it goes minimal. It doesn't go a Big Mac burger. It just goes Big Mac.
And actually, it's interesting that the Big Mac is a Mac. Nothing else is a Mac. Everything else is a Mc. And actually, their name is Mc, so why is it a Mac? Why isn't it a Big MC?
Because Apple will probably just go apeshit, wouldn't they, if they started calling other things something Mac, Fish Mac.
At this stage, but they had Big Mac before Apple Mac had Apple Mac.
Why didn't McDonald's go apeshit on Apple then?
Maybe they did.
iBurger.
God, it gets complicated with these big brands.
It does.
Here is another question of food. It's from Izzy, who is 24 and three quarters, and she's in Taunton.
Uh-huh.
And she says, when I was in Disney World, Florida recently...
Another place where you always get great cuisine.
Mm-mm. I noticed that as well as the usual range of extortionately priced snack foods, ice cream, hot dogs, candy floss, etc., there were stands selling ginormous turkey legs to the Disney tourists.
Yes, the Disney turkey leg.
I thought this might be a strange one-off, but I spotted them all around the park.
Yeah, it's a thing.
As well as people happily gnawing on these humongous bits of meat as they walk.
Yes.
In fact, such...
Americans are disgusting, actually, aren't they? I think it's lovely that, in a way, what Disney have created is a place, you know, it's a family place, it's a place where memories are made, it's a place where you relax and enjoy yourself, kick back.
Concrete jungle, you know, where dreams are made.
It's not concrete jungle. It's
plastic jungle.
It's, you know, they work hard to get the smells and the tastes right so that it sort of reeks of nostalgia and turkey fat. But... There is something disgusting about the fact. There is something disgusting about the fact that when a nation goes to enjoy itself and relax and kick back, it gnaws on a turkey leg as it walks around from right to right. That is particularly disgusting.
Why not a corn dog?
Indeed.
Well, because those are also
those are pretty gross too. Yeah.
Izzy says, such is the popularity of the Disney turkey leg that they even sell souvenir T-shirts with turkey leg emblazoned upon them. Because I just don't think they've got enough things to print on T-shirts. There,
I think that's right. Yeah, what they really need is some sort of the character that they could merch the hell out of.
Maybe focus on that, Disney.
Well,
they also
a series of them.
They also have turkey leg boxer shorts and turkey leg air freshener to fill your car with the scent of turkey leg.
Yes.
Delicious. Izzy says, I find this extremely weird.
That's because it is.
Not only is a jumbo turkey leg not a snack, but it must be extremely difficult to eat whilst walking around a busy theme park.
Mm.
Wouldn't you feel a bit like Fred Flintstone as well?
Maybe that's why they want to do it.
Well, it is. In fact, they were originally marketed as dino legs. In the Animal Kingdom theme park.
Izzy's got more ranting in her. She says, surely you get big greasy globs of meat juice on your face. Also, when you're finished with it, which must take ages, you have to walk around with a whacking great bone before you can throw it away.
There are, in fairness, there are a lot of bins at Disney World. Most of them sing at
okay.
you. So it's quite fun.
You can feed them.
In the bin. Yes.
That'd be nice. Izzy says, I find it odd that it's become so popular as a casual theme park snack in the Sunshine State.
Mm.
Well, they eat a lot of strangely warm, comforting food in the warm southern states, I find. like a lot of that southern comfort food. You think, how can you eat this on a hot day? And yet they do.
Yeah.
Anyway, Ollie, answer me this. Firstly, what are the origins of the Disney World turkey leg and why is it so popular? And secondly, does the turkey leg appear at any other Disney resort or only in Florida?
I'm not sure if it appears in the ones outside of the States, but it's certainly in Disneyland in California as well.
More than 1.6 million turkey legs sold every year across six parks.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Yeah, but those six parks, I reckon, are probably all in America. I think they are. Yeah, I don't think they include the ones in Paris, for example. Because can you imagine the
French... Qu'est-ce que c'est que ça, le dindon?
Be a proper...
Je ne le veux pas.
That would finally start the revolution. Get a proper socialist president. and Tokyo, I can't really imagine going for it either. You can't eat it with chopsticks. Something that, I mean, look, there's every kind of possible fairground food in the Disney parks. Popcorn, candy floss, hot dogs, corn dogs, ice creams, you know.
That sounds healthy.
They even have, indeed, it's not supposed to be healthy, it's supposed to be fun. And they even have things like special soft serve pineapple ice cream that they call Dole Whip, which you can only buy in one part of Disney World.
Right.
And the whole way through the parks, they actually have these little things for return visitors. It's all to encourage you to repeat and come back more than once a year if you're really into it. So, for example, like when I was there with my friend, we did this thing where you look for the hidden Mickeys. And across every ride, there's a hidden Mickey.
Mm-hmm.
And that's as in the silhouette of the three circles. So that can even be, like, we went to the Animal Kingdom and there's even a lab bit you can go into where there's Petri dishes laid out to look like Mickey.
But once you have identified the hidden Mickeys, what's in it for you?
Yeah, but the point is, that would take about seven visits to all the theme parks to find them all.
Do you win anything?
Because there's hundreds of them. No.
Just the satisfaction of a triumphant achievement.
You can go online and say that you've seen them all. Yeah, exactly.
I think that's really fun.
A physical Easter egg. Okay,
yeah,
clever.
Exactly. And Disney are very clever at all that kind of thing, and they do manage to find a theme park experience for everyone. This, weirdly, has evolved out of... Because it's been going for about 30 years, the turkey leg thing.
Wow.
But it's only got big since 2010.
Turkey legs are very big, though.
And that's basically because of Instagram. It's because it looks like a ridiculous holiday photo. So when you want to tell your friends, I'm at Disney World, fuckers. Like, obviously, you can do that with a picture of you and Tigger. But doing that, you have to queue for an hour. And, you know, you are standing with a lot of little boys and girls and you do feel a bit weird. The easier way to say on Facebook, I'm at Disney World, fuckers, is to buy a massive turkey leg and pose with it in a stupid way, looking primitive.
But I just think that most people would not know to identify turkey legs with Disney if you'd only been to Euro Disney or never been to Disney at all.
Yeah.
Such as I.
Yes, but it's not for us. As this is my point.
Yeah, but I'm on Instagram.
But it's for...
Why is it not for me?
Because Americans who go to Disney know what it means. And that's why it's become a bigger thing. And then, yes, they've merchandised it. There are T-shirts available, as you say, the air fresheners.
It is
very weird.
It just sounds like bullshit, though. The way to show that you're at Disney while spending money is to buy those plastic Mickey ears and put them on your head.
Yes, that is definitely a way to do it.
This sounds like a bullshit explanation.
Well, look, it's happened actually fairly organically. I mean, they've rolled out all the related souvenirs because of the public demand, but even a company like Disney, I think, couldn't have predicted that turkey legs would go viral, but they have.
It's like Welcome to Night Vale. Couldn't have predicted that it would be Tumblr fan art and cosplay that rocketed them to podcasting success.
Exactly.
It seems like a pretty practical snack food. And,
because no one wants them.
Well, they're making a massive fuss, so they're saying, oh, you got to walk around. But it's something on a stick. It's a meat lollipop. It's eminently practical.
Yes,
it's huge, though.
But turkey is a healthy meat, but the leg is an unpopular cut because it goes tough very easily.
It's also quite controversial. To be honest, only because Disney do it. I think if any other business was involved in this, this wouldn't be a kind of New York Times opinion piece, but it has been because Disney do it. It's quite controversial because apparently the legs come from male turkeys, and the turkeys are bred to be as large as possible. And eating the leg is like eating a symbol of the fact that we've got these monstrously large turkeys that are bred to be so big. And even though actually, obviously, in a way, the bigger the legs are, the more they'll be able to support themselves. Still, it's symbolically, you're walking around with this kind of bizarre human interference farming method being proudly on display.
I think also turkey legs are going to be a pretty cheap thing that you can sell as a single item because the white meat is sold at a premium and then the legs are all left to spare. So probably if you're the supplier, you can get hold of turkey legs cheaply. You don't have to present them in any interesting way. You don't have to put them in a receptacle because people can just grip them on the bone. So I reckon maybe that is behind it. And then they invented this Instagram wheeze on top in order to shift more turkey legs.
Maybe.
Self-fulfilling.
Maybe. I still think... I mean, yeah, of course, there must be a cost-benefit analysis involved. But I still think, basically, it's about fun. Isn't it? And the thing about Disney is you can't have, you know, pina coladas on sale as people walk around the Magic Kingdom. So this is just, it's a thing you do when you're in
Disney. Some indulgent.
They want as many of those indulgent treats as they can.
Candy floss and turkey legs.
So by the end of your trip, you've spent $50 on crap you don't want, but also you remember those smells and pictures as part of your experience that you only have there.
Well, why not for the ultimate Disney snack, a turkey leg wrapped in candy floss?
You jape, but they do actually sell an ice cream in the shape of a turkey leg.
That makes more sense than my thing.
To my knowledge, it doesn't have real turkey leg underneath it, but it looks like it does. It looks like a turkey leg that's been dipped in chocolate frosties.
Everyone wants a cornetto with little bits of turkey in it, doesn't it?
Delish.
I have a pointless obsession. This question.
From listener Adam, so thank you very much, Adam.
Thanks, Adam.
And Adam has also been moved to ask us a question via our phone line.
Helen and Ollie, answer me this. Is it a good idea to put 3 or 4 teaspoons of whatever ice cream you have into your coffee when you realise there's no milk at home?
That's kooky. I'd rather have a black coffee.
I think it depends. If you want your coffee to be sweet and tasting a bit of ice cream, then fine. If you want your coffee not to be sweet, unacceptable.
Here's a weird thing that I've got into, although I know it's increasingly popular. Almond milk.
Mm-hmm.
You had it here because you had a mutual vegan friend over, mm-hmm. and you, I think, very graciously went and bought stuff that she'd be able to drink.
I'm a good host.
I wouldn't even bother to think about that.
I had a bunch of vegan cakes messing up my bread bin for months because she didn't eat them. They're not that nice.
No, they're not nice. And almond milk is one of those things that you'd think, well, it's probably right if you're vegan, but it's not going to be a preference to milk. But actually, not for any health reason, just because I actually quite like the fact that it sort of gives you a little almond flavour, a little almond kick to your coffee.
Delicious.
I've started buying almond milk just to put in my coffee. It's nicer than milk. But ice cream, that's perverse. And bad for you. Here's another salubrious question from Pip in Wimbledon, who says, Helen, answer me this. Why do cats bury their poo?
We've got to have something to do.
And indeed, their wee. It seems like very fastidious behaviour for what ostensibly is a wild animal. There is nothing wild about my domesticated pet cat. Like, literally nothing.
She would survive for no minutes out there.
Well, unless somehow the jungle in any way resembles a slanket. we are sure, says Pip, that big cats like lions and tigers don't do this. I think they do, actually. I think they bury their poo.
No, they don't, because they're fucking lions and tigers, which means they are top of the heap.
They're top of the heap, but then do they want to alert other big cats that they've been there with their scent and everything? Do they?
Yes.
Do they just leave it on display? Do they?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
And so the house cats bury theirs because they know that they are subordinate to lions and tigers that might be hanging around your house in Hertfordshire.
Okay. So so why have domestic cats then developed the bizarrely prudish habit, says Pip, of burying their excretions rather than letting their sphincters run wild and free in the wind? Very poetic.
Unless your cat has a prolapse. So the instinct arises from the fact that big cats are the top of the pile.
Yeah.
And they can leave their shit wherever they want. Because animals can smell each other's pheromones on it.
Yeah, yeah.
So the cats hide it because they know that they're subordinate. Now, theoretically, they do that in your house because they think you are the lion or the tiger equivalent, and they're subordinate to you. So if your cat is shitting and pissing everywhere, that is basically it going, fuck you, I'm in charge.
I'm king of
this
the house.
This is my house.
I know that Coco owns the neighbourhood in terms of cats.
Yeah, and her name is on the deeds of your house too.
No, but it's really clear. No, because when we first moved in, a few cats would occasionally come into the garden. And this primal guttural scream came out of our cat. And they've never been back since. And she owns our parade of houses. I've not seen any cats come into our garden since. So it's obvious that she owns the garden.
Yeah.
But I hadn't thought that she might think I own the garden above her. That's nice to know.
Well, she knows that you don't own that garden.
But the problem with her burying her poo, which I appreciate she's doing for cleanliness in a way, is that she then gets mud all over her paws and then jumps on the sofa, and then we've got a muddy sofa. So really, yeah, she's made the house dirtier. And then, not as dirty as if she crapped on the sofa.
Yeah, but there might be some crap in that mud.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So really, she's making it look like she's being considerate, but actually she's like,
she's some kind of animal.
Here's a question from Jenny from Vancouver, who says, Ollie, answer me this. In The Phantom of the Opera, do you think the Phantom bones Christine when he takes her down to his lair and she passes out? I never used to think so, but upon rewatching the film, it seems fairly likely, especially when he says, only you can make my song take flight. Do you think song is a euphemism for penis?
No, in fairness, I think you can't from that lyric draw any conclusions, because he is talking romantically there, as you know, he's making an allusion to his heart rather than his wang.
Well, that's what you're trained to think, isn't it?
No, I think that's the case. But
so she's suggesting that he rapes Christine?
Yes.
Ooh.
And she's not the first to suggest it. And actually, I think he probably does. But, you know, in the fashion of a kind of modern post-feminist discussion around sexual consent, it's not clear that she's not partly into him, and that's the thing. She does pass out,
yes,
and
but
she does go down to his lair, but she also does want it. And so
yeah,
it is complicated.
Still, you want someone to be sensible.
You want her, she should give her consent.
As in awake,
yes.
not having the head screwed on, right?
I agree with you. But
I mean, legally, you want them to be able to acquiesce.
Correct.
And not just have suggested acquiescence in their previous behaviour.
Fine. But this is the thing. The behaviour that we do see on stage is that she chooses to stay with this man who she's seen threaten to kill her fiancé because she fancies him, not because he's ordering her to.
Christine, so she does not go for nice guys, does she?
That's it. She doesn't go for nice guys. So we have to think what happens down in the lair. Now, in the musical, it is left to our imaginations, and some people think something sexual happens, some people think it's just a romantic moment, or, you know, at worst, she's suffering from Stockholm Syndrome. But in the sequel, Love Never Dies, which tanked in the West End...
Canon or non-canon, would you say?
I'd say non-canon.
Okay.
By far. But nonetheless, actually, weirdly, did really well in Australia, so there's a DVD of it, and people talk about it. In the sequel, Love Never Dies, the lyrics by Ben Elton to the song Beneath the Moonless Sky make it very clear that actually there was probably some bonking going on, because Christine reflects upon the night they spent together. And I loved you. Yes, I loved you. I'd have followed you anywhere you led. I woke to swear my love and found you gone instead. So they were in the same bed together, and then he walked out.
And also she won't remember.
Well, indeed.
It's not very nice, is it?
It's not very nice, but it sounds like he probably had a go.
I don't think that's very clear at all. It might just be that she awoke, because I don't know the story, but she awoke to welcome her to the bed and he buggered off.
Yeah. I think to make it clearer, I think in the story of that, she actually has a son who is his. So I think that's fairly clear that he didn't use protection. But we don't know whether it was consensual or not. That song seems to tell us it was.
Well, doesn't sound good, though,
does
it?
How does ghost sex work?
He's not a ghost.
Oh, he's not a ghost?
No, you think he's a ghost.
Oh, was that a spoiler?
He's more of a ghoul than a ghost.
Right.
But he's a man, isn't he? He's a human man.
He's Beast. He's Beauty and the Beast.
Okay, so he does need to wear...
He has flesh and blood, and he does need to wear protection to prevent the impregnation.
He's got a boner like a man, but he's also got a mask on his face that separates him from the rest of humanity.
Okay.
And he lives in an opera house, which is eccentric. Very complex. I'd say it's time for me to revisit this, but I don't remember it being very good when I saw it as a child, so I'll just leave it, if that's
all
right.
It is my least favourite Andrew Lloyd Webber musical, and that is a long list. and I like some Andrew Lloyd Webber musicals, as we've discussed in the past. Sunset Boulevard, thought it was good, but this is a bit fooey. I don't know why everyone likes it so much.
No, especially if there's non-consensual sexual activity depicted in it, as if that's romantic.
And it's so 80s in a bad way as well. It looks really dated if you go and see it now.
Some people would find that great.
Yes, I suppose so. And I wonder if there was a period where visitors from Eastern Europe thought it was contemporary. But even so, now you look at it and it just feels... I don't get it.
Well, that seems like a slightly low note to end this episode of Answer Me This on.
Not at all. I think you should go out and consider every Andrew Lloyd Webber musical and whether sex was happening behind the scenes. I mean, what did Mr. Mistopheles get up to?
Just licking his balls. anyway, listeners, please send us your questions for next episode of the podcast. And all of our contact details are on our website.
AnswerMeThisPodcast.com, where you can find links to the Answer Me This store, which, as aforementioned, is the place you can buy our Christmas album. Plus, you can also buy our old episodes, our first 170 episodes.
As you wish.
And our app, all from that place. So do.
Sounds all right, doesn't
it? And support the show.
And we will return in 2 weeks' time.
Bye!